From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for our reporter roundtable. This is, of course, when we get you up to date on the news that made headlines this week. And our panel today, Kevin Richard, senior reporter and blogger with Idaho Ed News, Kelsey Mosley-Morris with Idaho Capital Sun, Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Statesman, and joining us this segment, Kalama Hines with East Idaho News. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday. Hello.
Happy Friday.
So last week, we touched on the Idaho GOP convention as it was going on. It is now wrapped up. And Kelsey, I believe you were in Twin Falls covering the convention. Can you give us the major takeaways? So can you give us the major takeaways and highlights?
Yes. Where would you like me to start?
Exactly, right?
It was very contentious and as far as the different camps that they had going on. It was really apparent that the Republican Party is not as unified as I think they wanted their message to be. Their slogan for that whole event was "United We Stand." And I think going into it, a lot of people assumed that, well, maybe not assumed, but were fairly confident that Tom Luna was going to be reelected as chair. And I talked to the treasurer who got ousted as well, and he was fairly sure he was going to win again. And it just became apparent throughout the couple of days that I was there that they did not read the tea leaves correctly. And it ended up being Dorothy Moon as the chairwoman. And the whole slate of executive committee members, including the treasurer and vice chairs, were ousted and elected with new people, several who are very hardline conservatives. And so I think that was the major thing. And the there was a lawsuit that Tom Luna launched against the Bonneville County Republican Central Committee before the primary. That was kind of the main talking point against Tom Luna at the convention. People were wearing shirts saying "Tom Luna sued me." They were wearing signs that said "I'm a volunteer and Tom Luna sued me." And so that was kind of one of the main things that was there. And there was also the flyers that were distributed to a homeless shelter trying to direct people to Tom Luna's campaign event that was supposed to be for delegates. And so that was a big kerfuffle that there's still a lot of fallout from among the Republican Party. And then there was just the policy things that they passed were pretty far to the right. There was the crossover voting. They want to try to limit who can vote in Republican primaries even further than they already have. And that was something that was instigated by Brandon Durst, who was a candidate for superintendent for public instruction, and he used to be a Democrat, so that was kind of ironic. And there were a couple of delegates there too who have changed their affiliation to Democrat in the last 6 months because they're trying to mess in the Democrat Party in the same way that they think that Democrats are messing in the Republican Party. So that was one of the big deals. And then, of course, there was the abortion platform that they edited a little bit. There was already parts of it in there, but there was a big battle over whether they were going to put an exception in for the life of the mother. And you can ask several people about the nuances of that, and they'll tell you that they didn't, you know, say no exceptions ever, but it's a policy document and not law, and that they will, you know, kind of work that out when they put legislation forward of the same effect. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that the interesting part, Kelsey, the most interesting is really these cracks in the party. But you know, but it still is the strongest party in the state of Idaho,
for sure. And it's I think a lot of people who aren't on board with some of the changes that have been going on don't really know what to do about it because it is such a powerful organization, and the way the courts have ruled. Have allowed the party to kind of function as a club, and so they can make whatever rules they want to make. But there's controversy over whether that will make it harder for people to just participate in general, and whether they're, you know, driving out a lot of their main supporters with some of these changes. And it was interesting, after the platform passed, a lot of delegates left the room and just left the convention before the resolutions were passed. And a lot of them looked very displeased and upset. And there was some talk afterward of taking voting rights away from some of the people who left who were on the central committee, the state central committee, so that they can't vote on the January stuff. And so there's just a ton of contention right now between various camps, and it will be ongoing, I think, especially as we have a new chairwoman who's fairly adversarial and very partisan.
Right. And Kevin, you wrote about the convention with a look at what the party wants in terms of education.
Right. And I think it really does dovetail to what Kelsey was talking about the policy aspect of this convention. It's a pretty hardline platform on education. It comes out pretty strongly in favor of education savings accounts. Now, that's an issue that Dorothy Moon pushed as a legislator. She co-sponsored a bill in that regard, which a bill that raises constitutional questions, also raises policy questions about whether public dollars should be going into private school scholarships. Didn't even get out of the House Education Committee, but we'll surely see another version of that kind of a bill in the next legislative session. So you've got that in the platform. You've got language about penalizing schools if they put money into social justice, indoctrination, however you define that is an open question. Language about vaccinations and masks and parental rights over those issues in school. Language that calls for directly electing State Board of Education members. State Board of Education has a lot of policy clout, but right now most of those members are gubernatorial appointees, with the exception of the state superintendent who automatically gets a seat on the state board. So that would be a major shift. There was a lot in this education platform that runs at odds to what education stakeholders have been pushing for, runs at odds to some of the language we've heard on education from Brad Little and from Republican nominee Debbie Critchfield. I think this is really interesting. And I tried to get interviews with Little and Critchfield this week. I didn't get interviews, and I barely got a statement from the governor about the education platform. And the statement didn't even talk about the education platform. It was talking about, you know, the governor's talking points on education, raising teacher salary, improving benefits for teachers, to the point where I had to actually email back the governor's spokeswoman to say, was the governor at the convention at all last weekend? Has he read the education platform? The answer I got was, well, he was there for part of the convention, and yes, he has read the education platform, but you couldn't really tell from the statement I got. So what I'm getting to here, Gemma, is that I think you've got a lot of tension, just like what Kelsey was talking about that you saw on the convention floor. I think you've got a lot of tension between these hardline delegates, these 700 or so hardline delegates, and the larger population of Republicans and Republican-leaning voters. I think this sets the stage for, you know, more infighting within the Republican Party.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's the thing to be watching. Kalama, before we move to a break, you are over in East Idaho. Get us updated on the Bingham County Sheriff, because he was set to go on trial, but the case has taken a bit of a pause.
Yes, that's correct. So the trial was set to begin this coming Monday. This past Friday, just a week ago, a motion was approved for the dismissal of defense. Justin Olison, the defense attorney, requested dismissal. He cited a breakdown of communication. He said that Sheriff Rowland actually asked for him to be removed, because citing ineffective counsel, basically. What was supposed to be a trial in the coming week is now just completely rescheduled.
And we'll just have to wait to see what happens at that point.
Yes. So as of right now, he has until July 22nd, Rowland has until July 22nd to find new counsel. And then they're going to be meeting on July 26th, the judge, the defense, and the prosecution.
All right. So we will see what happens at that point. Rachel, Meridian is one of, if not the fastest growing city in Idaho, yet its mayor doesn't want to put money in place to help fund affordable housing. So what's going on with that?
Yeah. So, I think Meridian has, you know, long been a place that's embraced, these single family home subdivisions. But, you know, the city is finally coming to terms with, well, not everyone here can live in these single family homes and, mm-hmm. you know, are struggling to even pay rent in our, in the apartments in Meridian. And so, you know, the city for the first time, which might be kind of surprising, is realizing that they need to kind of figure out their role in providing assistance for housing. And so at the city council meeting on Tuesday, the city decided to put some of its American Rescue Plan dollars to support an affordable housing, like affordable housing complex in the city. And that's going to be subsidized apartments. And that entity that's building that just needed some help. And the city's going to help them. And then the city is also going to put $250,000 into kind of like a pot and have that to provide housing assistance, provide that money to any organization can apply for that and then use that to, you know, help people who are facing eviction. So for example, Jesse Tree asked the city of Meridian for $500,000 because they're facing a the end of some federal COVID money. And so they're really worried about being able to provide the eviction and housing support that they provide to people. So Meridian would now allow an organization like Jesse Tree to apply for those funds and get them. So even though it's kind of half of what Jesse Tree was hoping for, it is something and we'll see what happens. You know, the American Rescue Plan dollars are not a forever thing. So I think the city is going to have to come up with a way if they decide that it is the city's role to help with affordable housing, they're going to have to come up with a way to do that when, you know, the American Rescue Plan dollars spread out. So that's what's happening right now. You know, I think Meridian is slow, but following city councils and mayors in the rest of the Treasure Valley with deciding, okay, affordable housing is something we need to work on supporting.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, to say that the state of Idaho has a surplus of money, I think is a bit of an understatement. But with that said, what could that potentially mean for education funding, I guess, if anything?
Well, yeah, we got the final number in this morning. The governor released the close of the budget year numbers for the budget year that ended on June 30th. Budget surplus came in at close to $1.4 billion, billion with a B. That is, to put it in perspective, not only is it at a record surplus, but it is a record by about $500 million over the surplus from a year ago. So the legislature is going to come to town awash with money. And that means that they're going to be awash with decisions to make, because when you have that kind of money, you have a lot of things that you might want to do with it, a lot of competing interests. The governor kind of foreshadowed what he would want to do if he's reelected and he presents a budget again in January. No big surprises here. He'd like to put money into education and infrastructure. He'd like to put money into another round of tax relief. Basically more of the same, what we've seen from the governor the past couple of years. What I think is interesting is, you know, this is a lot of money, but I think there's also a lot of uncertainty surrounding a lot of things in the budget, a lot of variables at play here. You've got an economy, and we don't really know what this economy is doing. We know we've got inflation. We know we've got economists suggesting that maybe a recession is a possibility, you know, in the next year or so, a national recession that would certainly affect Idaho. You've got questions about who's going to be in charge. I mean, you've got big turnover coming at the legislature. You'll have at least half of the members of the budget committee are going to be brand new. You know, you will have a new state superintendent of education. You'll have maybe a new governor. We'll see what happens with that election. You've got a lot of turnover there. You've also got this Reclaim Idaho initiative that would raise more than $300 million a year from income taxes for education. So there's a whole lot in the mix here. And I think there are questions really legislators have about the surplus and how much of it is for real, how much of it is long lasting, how much of it is a function of that one-time federal stimulus money that Rachel was talking about, as Meridian is trying to figure out what to do with. So, Yeah, there is a lot of money there, but I think there are a lot of unanswered questions about how this is all going to unfold next session.
Yeah. Kelsey, at the top of the program, you touched briefly on these alternate flyers that were passed around in regards to a campaign event during the Idaho GOP convention last week. What do we know about this now in terms of who potentially passed out these flyers?
Yeah, so the executive director of Valley House, which is the shelter in Twin Falls that I called to confirm if they had received those flyers, he talked to KTVB after my story and talked about how they demanded an apology from the person responsible and that they would name the person within 24 hours if they did not receive an apology. And that did not happen, apparently. So he did confirm that the individual they identified was a man named David Riley, who actually moved to Idaho in 2020 from Pennsylvania, I believe it was. And he had kind of a checkered past in Pennsylvania and was kind of forced out of his radio show that he hosted because he posted about his involvement in the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally, which was a white nationalist event where one person died. And a lot of his anti-Semitic tweets were outed during that time. And so he kind of left that area and came to Post Falls and has gotten involved with the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee there and was sent as a delegate to the convention with Kootenai County. And so I think they have security cameras at Valley House, and I think that's how they identified who it was. But he has not directly admitted that he was responsible on Twitter. He blocked me, but he's been tweeting about it plenty and talking about how it was just a nice thing that they did for the homeless community, basically. And then he tweeted a picture with Tom Luna and a donation that he'd given to Valley House of $100. And I don't really think anybody's buying it. It didn't seem like on either side anybody was really trying to defend him. And so it's been interesting to watch the reactions to it, but I haven't seen anybody come out and really say that it wasn't him. So we're fairly confident at this point.
Okay. So, Kevin, talk to us about the Boise School Board elections. They're happening September 6th, but people are already dropping out of the race.
Right. So we had the filing deadline for Boise School Board elections a couple of weeks ago, and we wound up with 18 candidates filing for 5 school board races, and it's all really confusing who's running and what, and what seats are for 2 years or 4 years or 6 years. Go on our website. We explain it a lot better than I can possibly do over the radio. But to cut to the chase here, 5 of the candidates were all aligned with a single church in Boise, the Well Church. And 4 of those 5 candidates who were aligned with the Well, they're either several of them were either pastors or deacons at the church. 4 of those candidates have dropped out of the race. So now we're down to 14 candidates for 5 seats. And it's an unusual election. Like I was saying, you know, most school board elections are in November. Boise has its elections in September because it has this governing charter that predates statehood. It's all quite confusing. But at any rate, if you're a Boise voter and you're just trying to get familiarized with this race, we'll be doing some forums with the Boise Metro Chamber, some virtual forums, so you can get to know the candidates. We've sent out questionnaires to the candidates. It's a pretty important race. And what we've seen with school board elections around the state and around the nation, these are a lot more contentious than they've been in the past. So we'll be covering it closely.
All right. And I want to thank all of you for being a part of Idaho Matters today on this very quick reporter roundtable that we're having. So a big thank you to Kevin Richard, senior reporter and blogger with the Idaho Ed, with Idaho Ed News, Kelsey Mosley Morris with the Idaho Capital Sun, and Rachel Spacek with the Idaho Statesman. Appreciate all of you so much.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
You too.